It's 12 noon. This is KBOO Portland. We're at 90.7 FM here in the city. Welcome to Unbroken Chain, Music of the Grateful Dead and Friends, where I'm breaking with, I guess, the entirety of my hosting of this show by doing a second show from a single year within the same calendar year. And what I mean by that is a few months ago, we call that May, I did a 50th anniversary show featuring the closest to a 50th anniversary date I could find, that being May 19th, 1966. And today I'm sticking with 1966 again for a very good reason, and I'm only going to be playing material prior to May of 1966. And the reason I'm doing this is quite a while ago, I scheduled an interview with Robert Greenfield, who is the author of the just about to be available book called Bear, all about Owsley Stanley. And that'll be coming up later on in the program. And I, in reading the book and hearing specifically about how Bear was captured, I'll say, by the Grateful Dead, as it were, I thought it only made sense to play as much music as I could find that Bear was listening to when he first became enamored of the Grateful Dead. And so that's what I'm going to do here today. Dates on some of this stuff are kind of questionable, but I'll mention that when I can. I'll be playing the second ever version known as a live recording of one of my favorite early tunes. And a lot of these songs, just simply because of the nature of when this is all happening, is the first time they ever played it live, including this here tune.
Well, I'm a hog for a bit. I can't get enough of your love. I'm a hog for a bit. I can't get enough of your love. When I go to sleep at night, that's the only thing I'm dreaming of. Hey! One little piggy ate a pizza. One piggy ate potato chips.
Into Operation Crystallization. Preezy, the chief engineer, has already left his station at the TV console to go down to the engine room to prepare the rocket fuel needed to enter this new configuration. The captain himself is going down. And there's the electrician. Cassidy, however, will remain at his post in the projection booth in order to keep driving this ship through whatever electrical and meteor shower we have to encounter. We'll keep all the stations alive on the line, and the old pointed head will continue to monitor from his post.
you know your father will be gone. Death don't have no mercy in this land. In this land, in this land. Come to your house, don't stay long. One of these days, you know your family's gonna be gone. Well, death don't have no mercy in this land. In this land. You know he don't stay long. Look in the bed, your whole family's gone. I said death don't have no mercy.
And that's because that's an acid test they're performing at that sometimes stuff strange happened. Of course, that was the Grateful Dead, and that recording was from January 8th, 1966, not even a month after they first performed as the Grateful Dead. That was at the Fillmore Auditorium in San Francisco. That was the Fillmore acid test, and we heard most of the Dead's set. From the top, we heard the very first performance of I'm a Hog for You, Baby, which had some cut in there from a prankster announcing some other stuff that was going on in the building. Operation Crystallization, I believe, was under preparation. Then we heard the first ever performance of Caution, Do Not Stop on Tracks, into the second ever version of Death Don't Have No Mercy. And that's all I've got from that show, but we have some stuff continuing on very soon after this. These next two tunes have no date associated with them other than 1966. First song has no name, although it very much sounds familiar to another much more well-known song about one of our southern cities.
I want to tell everybody if you're down in the hall tonight. If you got to feel good and you know you got to feel all right. I want to know if you feel it, if you hear it, if you understand what I'm talking about right now. I want to know if you hear now, if you hear right now. Let me hear you say yeah. Yeah. If you know what I'm talking about, I want to hear you say yeah. I want to hear you say yeah. 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 All right. Come on now. It's been a long, long time since I've seen my lover. It's been a long time on the road. She's been away from my house many, many years. I know she's gonna tear a heavy load. But when she come back home, she make me feel alright. I'm sneaking in my room in the middle of the night. She make me feel good, she make me feel right. Every time she come on home, when I wanna say yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. Everything's gonna be just so. Yeah, you're gonna love me now.
drum.
Hey, Phil. Hey, Jerry. I can do it. You can get up here and do it.
You don't have to ask. You already know.
Shortly. Hey. Ooh. No wonder. Hey, Owsley, you turned these microphones down. Can't hear it as well as we did before. Anyway, we're going to move to L.A. next week, but in the meantime, we might be back a little later after the Loading Zone plays another set. And look for our record on the Total Oblivion or Utter Insanity label.
Midnight now. When the rooster, I'll be in the
going around my mood. My little girl turned back and waved a hand. Oh, I could hear tell her mother right now before she said none. Oh, I just left one no good man. Tell you, I won't get drunk no more. Oh, Lord, please stop my baby from going now. I want to tell you, I won't get drunk no more. My sweet man, why did she have to go? Come, you tell me that somebody man. Said, come back, baby.
Thank you. never known.
Okay, so what we've been listening to this last set, starting out with a couple of undated tracks. We're not sure, just that it's 1966. We first heard an unnamed tune with Pigpen on lead vocals. Kind of sounds like another popular tune from that era, but it certainly is not the same song. We then heard the very tail end, probably like the last third of a version of You Don't Have to Ask, in which Phil, at the very end of the tune, mentions that next week the band is going to be moving to L.A. and to look for their album on the, what was it, Total Oblivion and Utter Insanity label? We then heard a couple of tracks from the Watts Acid Test, February 12th, 1966. We heard the first live version ever of Taste Bud, or as it's also referred to, Where My Baby. And that's only the second live known version of that tune. We then heard a very early version of Don't Ease Me In. And then lastly, just there, one of very, very few versions of Hey Little One. Now, the Dead moved down to L.A. in early 66, basically following the acid tests because the Pranksters went down there. And where the Dead went at that point, so did Owsley, or maybe it was vice versa. We'll get into more about that and many other things, as it is now my privilege to be able to bring Robert Greenfield to KBOO's airwaves. He is a noted journalist, novelist, playwright, screenwriter, and author of the absolutely brand new book called Bear, The Life and Times of Augustus Owsley Stanley III. Welcome to KBRU's Airways, Robert.
Well, it's an astonishing pleasure to be here because I have never heard any of the songs that you just played.
Oh, well, I'll send you some stuff after the show.
Well, I'm just going to jump in here because, you know, you basically got it right, which is the dead schlep, and that is the operative term here. Mm-hmm. The dead schlep Owsley to Los Angeles. They're following Kesey and the Pranksters. So actually, Kesey is decamped to Mexico to avoid being arrested. He's faked his own suicide, and he's off in the wilds of Mexico. But the Pranksters go to L.A., and the dead are the house band for the acid test, and they insist on going. They don't have a dime. I mean, Owsley or Bear, I know anybody who knows the dead knows that he had many names, you know. A Bear pays for everything, and he puts them up in this house, and the tales from the sojourn in Los Angeles are legendary, and we can get into them if you want to.
Let's get into them, but let's actually do it in sort of the right order a little bit.
Okay.
Obviously, we can't talk about absolutely everything. You front the book with a quote from Owsley, January 31st, 2007.
Right.
I can't read the quote because the FCC would shut us down, but he basically says, I don't want a biography written about me.
Right.
I don't want anybody talking about my childhood. I want to be known for the stuff I did, the skills I had, the talent I had, and none of this nonsense about he was born here and he went to school here and he got in trouble and da-da-da-da-da. But that said, is there anything you think significant enough about his childhood and upbringing that made him who he was that you want to mention it before we get into the interesting stuff?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't have written the book in the form that I did if I had not discovered, you know, how, I mean, Owsley from, I don't even know where to start because it's so overwhelming. Here's where it goes. I mean, Owsley is the scion or the grand scion, if you like that word, of Kentucky bluegrass political royalty. His grandfather, Augustus Owsley Stanley, was an extraordinary Democrat, trust-busting Democrat, who served three terms in the U.S. House of Representatives, was then the governor of Kentucky, and then was the senator from Kentucky. Bear adored him. He was a formative human being, obviously really a focused, brilliant guy. Bear's father, with whom Bear never got along, spent almost a year at the Naval Academy, and then at the age of 37, he enlisted in the Navy in World War II and was on the USS Lexington during the Battle of the Coral Sea when the Lexington, an aircraft carrier, was blown to bits beneath him and sank. And he spent the rest of his life working for the federal government. So I tell you all this because John Perry Barlow, who I would hope is well known to people who are listening to us, a Grateful Dead lyricist, Electronic Frontier Foundation, knew, first met Owsley in the Summer of Love in 67, in the Hate. Barlow said of Owsley, he is as American as apple pie. And so the background, he had terrible difficulties with his father. They never got along. Last point about his early years, at the age of 15, Owsley allowed himself to be committed as a voluntary patient to St. Elizabeth's Hospital in Washington, D.C. It's a mental institution, and I bring this up because at the same time in that mental institution, Ezra Pound, the great poet who influenced T.S. Eliot and was a notorious anti-Semite who made anti-American speeches on the radio in Italy during World War II. He had been brought back to America after the war to be tried as a traitor, and instead of that, they put him in St. Elizabeth's. He spent 7 years there, and when he finally got out, they asked him what he thought about America. And he said, all America is a lunatic asylum. So between Barlow's quote and Ezra Pound's quote, that's where Owsley lives, and that's what this book is about.
I think another really key thing to mention about not his childhood per se, but definitely his young adulthood, is when he was in the military, he was goofing around one day trying to do a, quote, clown dive.
He wasn't in the military yet. He was, no offense, he was a lifeguard during the summer, and military guys were showing him these crazy dives. Good point. He did this crazy dive, and he ruptured his eardrum. And then he, well, I hate to make this reference, we're back to Phil Spector, who was deaf in one ear. And so Bear couldn't really hear that. He couldn't hear stereo the way people do. Yes, it influenced the way he recorded sound for the rest of his life. Yeah,
and mixed. And I don't know how many people out there listening to the show already today noticed extreme left-right separation in everything that I've been playing. And in editing this stuff, when I would cancel out one channel, there's no more vocals. Like, at all.
That's exactly correct. His whole thing was right ear leads to left brain, left ear leads to right brain, mixes with the brain. That's, you've nailed it completely.
Let's just jump into the era in which Bear is best known. He basically has enough of the East Coast and makes his way out to California. He's been married twice by the time he arrives in Berkeley, showing up at the Brown Shoe, where I guess, I don't know if he's exactly a colleague of yours, but fellow Rolling Stone writer Charles Perry, Rolling Stone writer.
Well, Charlie was a colleague of mine, and for those of those who are old enough to go back, Charlie wrote the dope column under the pseudonym Smokestack El Ropo. And Charlie is an extraordinarily brilliant human who went to Princeton, and he lived there with Owsley, and a lot of the straight business account of what Owsley was like in that period comes from Charlie.
And he shows up at the house, and, and you know, the people in the house are a little bit relieved that drugs as a topic and an interest are okay with Owsley, but about an hour later, they kind of realize that he hasn't stopped talking about drugs, and they're actually a little concerned now. Pick it up a little bit from there.
Well, I'm laughing because to jump forward for, you know, a great quote, and I'm sorry to ruin the chronology, but this is the way the mind works. But so when Bobby Weir met Owsley for the first time, he was on Owsley acid, Bobby. Okay, so he certainly knew who Owsley was, and I said to him, like, well, what was it, you know, what was it like to, you know, and Weir said, you know, if you were going to talk to Owsley back then, you had to pack a lunch, because he was unable to summarize. He didn't have that capability. I mean, I have interviews with him where he's going on for, like, 7 pages about stuff I barely understand concerning sound and atmospheric weather conditions. So, yeah, they were happy because they were smoking weed. Then they were unhappy because they thought maybe this guy's a narc. But, you know, to just pick it up from here, very rapidly he gets into it. He finds out that morning glory seeds are vaguely psychedelic when consumed in huge quantities. He starts trying to sell morning glory seeds. Then he meets this very attractive undergraduate named Melissa Cargo, who's studying to become a research chemist. And he hits on her right away, and they become a couple. Then he takes half a cap of Sandoz. It's the real stuff. He's taken acid before, you know, and he had the acid experience. The cars were kissing the parking meters. But this stuff is so powerful that he realizes he's never really taken acid before. He and Melissa go to the Bancroft Library, which is still on the campus of UC Berkeley. And Bear basically sits there for maybe a couple weeks, and he reads. He reads every scientific abstract. I mean, this stuff is not, you know, Sandoz is still the only source of it. Albert Hofmann discovered it there in 1938. Then he accidentally ingested some in 1943. And then 3 days later, he took the first intentional acid trip in history, Bicycle Day. But the only place you can get real acid is if you have a academic qualification, a medical connection. So Bear, being Bear, who's not a chemist, never studied chemistry, he's a rocket engineer, he's a radio operator, he can take cars apart, the guy can do anything, he's a blacksmith. He starts doing stuff, that's the best way to put it, in Berkeley, and he's probably making methadrine, which is a lot easier. And, you know, what I have to tell people, with all due respect to Walter White, making LSD is not like making meth. It is an incredibly complicated chemical process. LSD itself is an incredibly fragile substance. It may come as a shock to people. It dissolves in water and doesn't have any psychedelic properties. So it takes him a while. It's not like, bam-o, I got it. Plus, he's working in his bathroom, you know. What happens is he and Melissa go to Los Angeles, and the first batch that he comes up with consists of 800,000 doses of the purest LSD that's ever been synthesized on the street. And a musician friend of his gets some, because Owsley never dealt on the street. He sold to people who then sold, and for those who would like to know, the price of a dose back then was $3. Okay, still a lot of doses. And this musician goes out and sells it, and he tells people that the name of the acid is Owsley.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the name comes into the culture.